We are reaching the end of the book, the end of the Old Testament book and Prophet Daniel. And it's a landmark book among books. It's got certain unique characteristics to it. And I've been glad to be in it. It's quite a big study to get into it, but I've been very glad. I wouldn't be surprised if you have felt as though these last chapters are harder than the first ones. I felt that way. I could say even Daniel felt that way. There's a point in our reading today where he will hear one of the figures in his vision and in his dream say, "How long will it be before these astonishing things are fulfilled?" And when he hears the answer, that curious phrase that it will be a time and times and half a time, he responds, "I heard, but I did not understand. So I asked, my Lord, what will the outcome of all this be?" And he replied, "Go your way, Daniel, because the words are rolled up and sealed until the time of the end." You know, so yeah, these last chapters are harder. They were hard for him as well. It's interesting how the prophets sometimes will forecast a particular thing, an event, a coming event in the history of the people, a particular ruler who would rise, certain things he would do, but at the same time, and I'm saying it seems this way, but at the same time, be giving a foretaste of things that will be seen perhaps even as a pattern. And perhaps, well, I think even I could say definitely, that would be characteristic even of the final conflicts before the end of time. Predicting particular things, but the things have characteristics, and the characteristics are patterns, and they are patterns that get seen again and again, and they're patterns that are there at the end. I think prophecy goes like that, different places. Chapter 7 in our book was like that. As we rush to the end here, I'm backing up to chapter 7 for a moment. There was portrayed in chapter 7 a very clear sequence of historical events. They're on record. We know, we've come to know that sequence of empires. You've got Babylon, and then Persia, and then Greece, and then Rome. You've got a sequence of historical empires. In chapter 7, it seems to say that somehow proceeding out of that fourth kingdom comes one who will speak against the Most High and oppress his holy people. Someone, I'm just quoting bits of chapter 7, someone who would, in fact, into whose hands the holy people would be delivered for a time and be oppressed by him. But then the chapter goes like this. It says, but the court will sit, his power will be taken away and completely destroyed forever, and then the sovereignty, the power, the greatness of all the kingdoms under heaven will be handed over to the holy people. Like, you just head for the culmination of all things. And that, I think, is a pattern. That doesn't mean that the prophecies were not related to specific historical events coming up, but they seem to show such elements as would be characteristic again and again and ultimately. I've often called that pattern foothills and mountains, as though the prophet looks ahead and sees a foothill and describes it, an event in history. But that foothill represents characteristic things about ultimate issues, which would constitute the mountain behind it. That's one way to discuss that. And I think our passage today does the same. As the book comes to a close, one more time we hear the coming of a king. And one more time that king oppresses God's people. One more time he comes to an end. As he comes to an end, I mean, you see this king coming, you see very specific circumstances. You see the names of nations and places and specific things. And then suddenly you seem to be talking about the culmination of all things. An intense distress before resolution, but then resurrection from the dead. And it compresses and puts all that together in our passage today. Let's finish the book. Let's read it from chapter 11 and verse 35 on through the end of the book. I want us to take note of verse 35 because one more time, the language of the verse seems to have that sense of completion. In verse 35, some of the wise will stumble so that they may be refined, purified, and made spotless until the time of the end, for it will still come at the appointed time. Just that language, it sounds like completion there. But then it goes on, and now we're finishing. The king will do as he pleases. He will exalt and magnify himself above every god, and will say unheard of things against the God of gods. He will be successful until the time of wrath is completed. For what's been determined must take place. He'll show no regard for the gods of his fathers, or for the one desired by women, nor will he regard any god, but will exalt himself above them all. Instead of them, he'll honor a god of fortresses. A god unknown to his fathers, he'll honor with gold and silver, with precious stones and costly gifts. He will attack the mightiest forces with the help of a foreign god, and will greatly honor those who acknowledge him. He will make them rulers over many peoples, and will distribute the land at a price. At the time of the end, the king of the south will engage him in battle, and the king of the north will storm out against him with chariots and cavalry and a great fleet of ships. He will invade many countries and sweep through them like a flood. He will also invade the beautiful land. Many countries will fall. But the land of Edom, Moab, the leaders of Ammon, will be delivered from his hand. He will extend his power over many countries. Egypt will not escape. He'll gain control of the treasuries of gold and silver and all the riches of Egypt, with the Libyans and Nubians in submission. But reports from the east and the north will alarm him, and he will set out in great rage to destroy and annihilate many. He'll pitch his royal tents between the seas at the beautiful holy mountain, and yet he will come to his end. And no one will help him. At that time, Michael, the great prince, who protects your people, will rise. There will be a time of distress such as has not happened from the beginning of nations until then. But at that time, your people, everyone whose name is found written in the book, will be delivered. Multitudes who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to everlasting life, others to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the heavens, and those who lead many to righteousness like the stars, forever and ever. But you, Daniel, close up and seal the words of this scroll until the time of the end. Many will go here and there to increase knowledge. Then I, Daniel, looked, and there before me stood two others, one on this bank of the river, one on the opposite bank. One of them said to the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, "How long will it be before these astonishing things are fulfilled?" The man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, lifted his right hand and his left hand toward heaven, and I heard him swear by the one who lives forever, saying, "It will be for a time, times and half a time. When the power of the holy people has been finally broken, all these things will be completed." I heard, but I did not understand. So I asked, "My Lord, what will the outcome of all these things, of all this be?" He replied, "Go your way, Daniel, because the words are closed up and sealed until the time of the end. Many will be purified, made spotless and refined, but the wicked will continue to be wicked. None of the wicked will understand, but those who are wise will understand. From the time the daily sacrifice is abolished and the abomination that causes desolation is set up, there will be 1,290 days. Blessed is the one who waits for and reaches the end of the 1,335 days. As for you, go your way until the end. You'll rest, and then at the end of your days, you will rise to receive your allotted inheritance." I will be able to dissect all that. I just won't. Every detail, and you probably wouldn't want me to. But I would like to identify themes here that have been in place. We have seen this same set of themes before in this book more than once. And it goes like this. Set before these folks is a season of time during which a particular wicked ruler would rise and have success and oppress the people of God. It would be a season of time through which they would have to endure. We take note of the characteristics of this ruler because they fit a set of characteristics we've heard before. It's like we're supposed to be recognizing the pattern so that we can see it whenever it would come. Number three, we have a sense of the necessary fulfillment of certain ordained providences, both in terms of hard times they're going to have to face, but also in terms of the completion of things, the demise of wicked rulers, and the restoration of God's people. But there is this hard season of waiting, and that's set before them. And it seems to intensify in its conflict before it's all done. We have also the idea of the refinement of people, God's people, refined, purified, I think, through the hardship. We could talk about that. And finally, we have this idea of the blessed promised inheritance, which is held out in that last verse to Daniel. But it's been throughout. Those simple, straightforward, sort of six things. I hope we can, for today's message, that's a pattern. That's been in this book before, in these latter chapters. And I think that can be understood. So there they are. I want to keep it that simple in one respect. Let's walk through them a bit. The success of an enemy leader is one of the hardest ones to stomach. As the prophet of God tells them, that's what they're going to have to face. But I want to make a parallel. Actually, if you've been watching those verses go by, at verse 36, when we read it today in chapter 11, how long will that wicked ruler be successful? Verse 36, he will be successful until the time of wrath is complete. And I think there are parallels that make sense. The very Babylonian captivity that they had just experienced was a time of rebuke. It was a time of discipline. It was a time of wrath that they had to endure. God's people had always had faithful and unfaithful in the mix. Why did the Babylonian captivity show up anyway for them? Because of the unfaithfulness of even the people who were called the people of God. There was a mix, a mixed bag of people. And they were living it. They were under it. They were under a time of wrath. But what happened in that time of wrath? It's just like what's described here for some future event. In that time of wrath, they were underneath wicked kings and wicked rulers and nations that didn't believe in God. And that apparently had to come to be. And it would become complete. That's as definite in providence as the coming of the hard thing. But they were living it right then. Here, Daniel seems to portray it one more time, or maybe more than one more time. But that's what they were up against. We had the same pattern in chapter 8. Again, we've had it in other places. I want to take note that you have it in the New Testament as well. The Lord Jesus himself describes something almost identical to this that would happen after he was crucified, after he was raised from the dead. It would happen within one generation of those events. He told them that the city of Jerusalem would be surrounded and trampled. He told them that the temple itself would be knocked down. And that's quite exactly what happened. But less about 40 years, just 40 years after Jesus was crucified and raised from the dead, the temple got, the city was surrounded, the temple was destroyed, burned. And the standards of other gods were placed right there at the temple. And Jesus foretold that, calling it, in Luke 21:22, the time of punishment in fulfillment of all that's been written, of all things. It's the same pattern. A time of wrath until all things were fulfilled. Luke 21:22, this is the time of punishment in fulfillment of all that's been written. Jerusalem will be trampled on by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. But the hard part is that the one succeeding seems to be the enemy of God, the enemy of God's people. But it's described as a time of wrath coming to be in fulfillment. The Lord Jesus himself seemed to speak even beyond that event. Even beyond that event, do you remember again, this is echoing something I said in the message on chapter 8, but Jesus spoke of a time when there would be much falling away from association with Christians. He said in Matthew 24:12, because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. Hard times. But it's times that represent also sort of the mixed bag, people who should have been associated with the name of the people of God, but the love growing cold because of wickedness. And those would be hard times. It's one of the toughest things to take in these things. That's hard. We had an echo of it back in chapter 7 in Daniel. I'm just showing you how it comes in patterns and ways. In chapter 7, there was someone described who would be waging war at 7:21, waging war against the holy people and defeating them. And yet this is what is described as one of those that rushes to the end. And so the Ancient of Days came, pronounced judgment in favor of the holy people, and the time came when they did possess the kingdom. It's a pattern. It's a hard pattern. But it's there in chapter 7, it's there in chapter 8, it's there in all of chapters 11 and 12. Jesus mentions it for his own immediate time, one generation. Jesus seems to forecast the great mountains at the end and those kinds of things. It's a pattern, it's a pattern, it's a pattern. In the book of Revelation, at chapter 13, again, it's an exact replication in kind of how the visions of Daniel portray what is to come. And using, you know, beasts and things, whatever, portrays coming persons. But listen to what it says in Revelation 13:5. So this is all after the Lord Jesus. It talks about one who was given a mouth to utter proud words and blasphemies and exercise its authority for 42 months. 42 months. 42 months. It's about a year and 2 years and a half a year. A time and times and half a time. It's the kind of model, the kind of picture you get. And it opened its mouth to blaspheme God and slander his name and his dwelling place and those who live in heaven. It was given power to wage war against God's holy people and conquer them. A prediction yet after Christ. Same cycle happening again. There it is. By the way, when I quote Revelation like that, I notice, again, as part of the pattern, the characteristics of the enemy leader are the same. Same as in Daniel. Same as in Daniel. Uttering proud words, blasphemies, actually making himself out to be like a god, actually making himself out to be God and to be worshipped. It's all through Daniel. And it shows up again. We heard it in chapter 7, chapter 8, now chapter 11. Chapter 11 had it a bunch of times. His heart will be set against the Holy Covenant. He will show favor to those who forsake the Holy Covenant. He will flatter, with flattery, he will corrupt those who have violated the covenant. Characteristics of an enemy leader that they had seen and you would see again and again and in the end. And chapter 11, verse 32, but the people who know their God will firmly resist him. I think that's what this is all about. They had seen it. They had seen it in characters like Nebuchadnezzar. They'd seen it in Belshazzar. They saw it in Darius. People who portrayed themselves out like they were God, they would see it yet again in their history. They would see it in the after the Greek Empire. They would see it again in the Roman Empire. I think we've seen it since. I think we'll see it again. You see where I'm going with all this? It's my best attempt at putting things together. So, you know, judge what I say against the word, but I think it comes together like that. I think of how, again, a New Testament reference, how the people at the Thessalonica church wondered, when is this all going to happen? When's it all going to happen? When's it all going to happen? There were some false teachers sneaking in saying, well, it already did. Judgment Day already came. You missed it. maybe it has already come, and the Apostle Paul responded to them and said, no, it has not. The final thing, the final culmination has not already come. You want to hear his words? That day will not come unless the rebellion comes first. Do you hear that? The time of rebellion, the time of that wrath, the time of this intense conflict, it will not come until the day of rebellion comes first, and the man of lawlessness is revealed, the son of destruction, who opposes and exalts himself over every so-called god or object of worship, so that he takes his seat in the temple of God, proclaiming himself to be God. It's the same set. Same set of characteristics. They had seen it before. It was forecast for them in two empires specifically. I think we've seen it again. I think Jesus spoke of it. Paul was speaking of it coming yet again. And in Paul's words, that seems to be the end. Because they were asking him about the end, capital T-H-E, the end. What's the end going to look like? There's going to be a leader like that. But we've already heard about him. We've already heard these characteristics. I'd like to touch briefly on that's the substance of this whole kind of message. I want to touch briefly on these other characteristics or the other, you know, pattern things in the outline. The idea of necessary fulfillment. Verse 36, what has determined must take place. In one sense, you say to yourself, that's not very good news. Not from what I'm hearing from here. What's determined here must take place. We've got to face rulers like that. It's a mixed bag, and there are times of wrath, and we're going to have to suffer the faithful with the unfaithful. We're going to have to suffer the same things. But it's not only the hardships that are forecast. It is the conclusions, the outcomes. And Daniel has been full of it. The saints will inherit the kingdom. The wicked rulers will all come to an end. Everyone mentioned in Daniel, his end is mentioned as a forecast thing. These must come to be. But there is this season of waiting, a time and times and half a time. The commentary of John Calvin on this was helpful to me. There's more to be said, but he said it this way. In a sense, that phrase, a time and times and half a time, could communicate, I'm not quoting him, I'm paraphrasing him. It could communicate something like this. It will be long. In fact, it will be redoubled in its length. But it is not forever. A time and times and half a time. Something to think about with regard to the length of that time. One thing I notice. That frame of time comes up in the New Testament again a couple of times. It comes up in Revelation. Like this. It comes up like the time during which the believers will have to suffer under a ruler like this. And even more broadly, it seems, at one point, it happens to be in chapter 12, there's that image in Revelation of, it's almost as though Israel, the people who would give birth to the Lord, is portrayed there like a woman. But it's an awful scene because there's a dragon just waiting to devour the child that's born. But she is protected for a period of time. That period of time is called a time. And times and half time. It seems like that one's the big picture. Yes, the enemies of God will have their success, but it's not forever. Anyway, that's just some things to think about. Again, it's all about the refinement of the people of God. That came through strong in chapter 11 and chapter 12. Remember, chapters 11 and 12 are all one vision? Huge vision. But it's all one vision. And he's standing by the river and he sees this and he sees that. It's all one vision. And mentioned again and again and again is this idea of the refinement of God's people. I really think that's what this is about. To stand firm under these conditions. To hold true. To be purified. Because even the wise can stumble. They need to be purified. And that comes through in these chapters. And then finally, again, it is the matter of the promised blessing and the promised inheritance. In our reading today, it only kind of came up with Daniel, right? You're going to rest and you will receive your inheritance. But it's come up about the whole people of God a number of times throughout Daniel. You get wicked kings forecast, but they will come to an end and the people will receive the kingdom. And the wicked king is forecast and he will have his successes, but he will come to the end and the people will receive the kingdom. And they will be raised from the dead and shine. Those who are wise will shine. And those who teach, how's it going here? Those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the heavens, and those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever is encouragement to the people to hold true. Stay strong. Teach others to know God, to know righteousness. So these are not easy things, but I genuinely believe they fall in that pattern and have done so before. And the New Testament picks up on the same thing. It is for the refinement of the people of God. It is a call to hold true. Let's pray. That says your kingdom never ends and that Christ is on the throne. And I pray for these, our people, that we could hold strong and true and not be flattered or taken in by the kingdom of this world. And walk with us in that. Thank you for the book of Daniel.